Welcome back, folks. Second hour of War Room Live is on. We'll be joined by Tiffany Cianci in the third hour. I got a lot of videos to go to. I'll stop just ranting endlessly here. We got some pretty interesting developments on a number of different fronts, including a new announcement, clip 19 here. Todd Blanche has announced another raft of charges for healthcare fraudsters and scam artists. Here is, and a lot of talk about whether he'll be made the official head of the DOJ, he is the acting head right now, or whether he'll move into where Tulsi Gabbard was. But here's Todd Blanche announcing a big roundup of healthcare fraudsters. Let's watch.
Today, we are announcing federal and state charges, all of which were charged or unsealed at some point over the past 2 weeks, the past 14 days. Coordinated nationwide action. Since June 8th, we've charged 455 defendants across 56, like I said a minute ago, U.S. attorney's offices, and 45 U.S. states and territories. As alleged in the various indictments, these individuals participated in healthcare fraud schemes involving over $6.5 billion in false claims submitted to Medicare, Medicaid, and other healthcare programs. The team around me will get into more specifics, but here are a few points that stand out. In one indictment, we're bringing charges against a corporate executive in Arizona in connection to over a $1 billion fraud involving unnecessary wound grafts. This alleged scheme costs Medicare over $1 million per patient. In total, our indictment charges 11 defendants for over $2 billion in fraudulent claims in connection to alleged wound care schemes. The indictment also alleges that these individuals then used the taxpayer money to bankroll multi-million dollar homes, luxury vehicles like a $135,000 Maserati, jewelry like an $865,000 Bulgari necklace, and to top it all off, to fund the construction of a $4.6 million hotel at a beach resort in the Philippines. We're taking back the money, the luxury cars, the jewelry, and these alleged fraudsters will face justice. The coordinated actions of the past 2 weeks have resulted in over $182 million in cash and other assets seized, making clear our healthcare fraud enforcement efforts generate a significant return on investment for our taxpayers.
But where's your empathy, Todd Blanche? Where's your empathy? Can you believe these Republicans just cut off $6.5 billion in healthcare funding for low-income people? I mean, the heartlessness, the ruthlessness, the lack of empathy. It's shocking to see. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche announced that 455 defendants across 45 states and American territories have been charged with healthcare fraud schemes since June 8th. These schemes saw $6.5 billion in false claims being submitted to federally funded healthcare programs like Medicare and Medicaid. Todd Blanche detailed a few of the schemes. DOJ is bringing charges against an Arizona provider that billed false claims for wound grafts over $1 billion. He stole $1 billion from the government. $1 billion. It's like, wow. I'm sorry. What the hell? When you have programs that can go one, or in this case, $6.5 billion over budget, and you don't even notice, I think we have a major issue here. The federal government spends $1.1 trillion on Medicare per year and $930 billion on Medicaid. Blanche has now revealed that billions of those dollars are misdirected into fraudulent schemes. Blanche said the DOJ intends to recover as much of the funds as possible through asset seizure. But where's the, it's so unempathetic. Where's the empathy? You know, this guy really wanted his own hotel in the Philippines. Okay. Can't you empathize with that? Can't you empathize with the poor, downtrodden billionaire fraudster that just wants to make his own hotel? I mean, where is the humanity here?
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn, AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. And don't forget to download the app. Go to AlexJonesApp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
Welcome back, folks. Second hour of War Room is on. Everything is just so insane. Honestly, I don't even know. I don't even know where to go from here. In the UK, it's just a little example. Just the modern world in a nutshell. 15-year-olds are allowed to have social media. Are not allowed to have social media. So up until you're 15, no social media. You got to be 16 to get social media in the UK. However, 5-year-old children are now permitted to have puberty blockers because the government said so. So you can't have social media until you're old enough to drive. But if you want to permanently change your physiognomy, if you want to alter and deform and disfigure your physical being for the rest of your life, you can do that at 5 years old. Here's a member of parliament talking about it. Let's watch this video.
Madam Deputy Speaker, a parent cannot consent to their child engaging in sexual activity, and soon they won't be able to consent to their child having a social media account. So why does the Secretary of State think that a parent should consent to drugs being administered to their child to suppress their puberty and alter their sexual development?
Yeah. Health Secretary.
Well, Madam Deputy Speaker, we're following clinical advice. We are making sure that there is a triple lock on the consent for children and young people to be involved in this trial, involving the consent or assent of the young person themselves, the consent of parents or guardians, the NHS care team, the national multidisciplinary team that I mentioned earlier. That is how this trial ensures that there is a high bar for being involved in this trial, and that all aspects of a young person's life are considered.
That's a lot of words to say yes. Say yes, that is actually what happens. Five-year-olds can be put on puberty blockers, but parents cannot consent to them being on social media. And it gets crazier. And it gets significantly crazier because obviously this is happening all across Europe at exactly the same time in exactly the same way. Digital ID, age verification on the basis of we have to stop kids being groomed online while simultaneously burying the massive grooming scandal that they themselves facilitated with the importation of immigrants. And now all across Europe, social media bans will prevent children from doing things like logging onto Facebook. But if you want to kill yourself, no age limit. That's actually fine. You can do that 12 years old. Child under the age of 12 euthanized in the Netherlands. For the first time since a change in the law in the Netherlands, a child under the age of 12 has died by euthanasia. The death of the child was confirmed by the country's health minister, Sophie Hermans, as she presented the annual report to the committee that reviews all late-term abortions and medically assisted deaths of children to Parliament on Monday. According to the report, the child was under the age of 12 and had been seriously ill, but no further details were given. Assisted dying for terminally sick children aged 1 to 12 has been legal for 2 years in the Netherlands. Before the change in the law, only newborns and those over 12 could be euthanized. Under Dutch law, parents must be consulted. Oh, well, that's nice. Well, that's good. I mean, You'd hate to think you were going to medically murder a 12-year-old without the parents' permission. I'm glad they get the parents' permission first. That's a comfort. The child's death has been referred to Public Prosecution Service, which will decide if doctors complied with the rules surrounding euthanasia. The committee's report will be made public shortly, they say. Under Dutch law, in cases of euthanasia, parents must be consulted. The child must be suffering unbearably, and there can be no chance of recovery. Euthanasia in the Netherlands is only permitted if the request comes from the patient, and if a doctor agrees they're suffering unbearably, the doctor must be satisfied that the patient is not acting under pressure and must obtain a second opinion. Euthanasia has strong public support in the Netherlands, and the country became the first country to legalize it for those with incurable illnesses in 2002. So again, how about we don't euthanize any children? What if just, and I understand there's going to be nuances to this argument, but I'm just going to stake out my position right now. How about no killing children by doctors? Can we just establish that right out? Which again, it's just genuinely insane. Genuinely insane. What else is there to say about it? They're euthanizing children under 12 in the Netherlands. So I'm against that personally. I'm against that sort of thing. And like, I wonder, like, is it worth it to get into the wider philosophical underpinnings of this, like where this is going, how we're being sort of dragged into this reality, how the powers that be are really doing everything they can to make people okay with dying unnaturally. The whole process of, you know, what's his name? Emmanuel. He's one of the brothers, right? Ari Emanuel, one of them, can't remember which one, wrote the article about nobody should live past the age of 70. We should all just be okay with surrendering ourselves to the furnace once we've stopped, you know, being productive for our capitalist system. Meanwhile, he's like 76 years old now, hasn't killed himself. Isn't that weird? Yeah, there it is. Why I hope to die at 75. Ezekiel J. Emanuel. One of the, how should we put it, unelected aristocracy of this country. One of the families, like the Pritzkers, the Emanuels, just every sibling and every cousin just happens to be a super high-powered something or other, and they all happen to have the most anti-human, despicable mindsets of all time, but that are being normalized around the world. Do I need to explain where this goes? Do I need to explain the purpose of devaluing human life like this, of normalizing the idea that, oh, your kid's got Down syndrome, into the furnace he goes? Do I need to explain why that's bad? I mean, it's just completely insane. This is why I can't bear to be lectured about empathy from the left. The classic. You know, a phrase I always think of is they don't want you to say retarded, but they do want you to kill them. They don't want you saying the word retarded, because that you're not being very empathetic towards the retarded. You have to have empathy, but you know how bad it feels for them to hear, you know, their condition used as an insult? You should have empathy for them. And then you're like, okay, well, the child that you're pregnant with is Down syndrome. And they're like, flush it out, throw it down the toilet, get rid of it immediately. We're not going to be lectured to about empathy by these people. I swear, it's been that way. It's been that way my whole life. I just remember being in elementary school, and one of my best friends from preschool had a brother that was Down syndrome. And I was like the only kid in school that treated the Down syndrome kid like a human being. You're gonna tell me you're more empathetic than me. All right. Meanwhile, there's just so much. All right. Antifa leader Benjamin Song sentenced to 100 years of for Texas anti-ICE terror attack. Seven other militants also sentenced. Once again, I would like to point out the fact that this should be the biggest story in America, should continue to be the biggest story. Every update to this trial should be repeated ad nauseum by the very same people that spent a year and a half covering January 6th every day. What happened in Texas made January 6th look like exactly what it was, a walk through the Capitol, an unapproved tour. What happened in Texas was the epitome. It was the, you know, the perfect illustration of domestic terror of the most dangerous sort. And yet, nobody in mainstream media is covering this. People even in the alternative media are hardly covering this. This is, in fact, the only article I could find covering this today from Postmillennial. Eight members of a North Texas Antifa cell have been given decades in prison for their role in an attack on an ICE detention facility in the state in July of 2025. Sentences handed down to the group of eight militants ranged from 30 years to 100 years. Ringleader Benjamin Hanel Song received the highest sentence, with U.S. District Judge Mark T. Pittman sentencing him to 100 years, Andy Ngo reported. Song has been convicted of charges that include attempted murder and discharging a firearm in furtherance of a crime and violence, the most serious charges in the case. Song had shot Alvarado Police Lieutenant Thomas Gross in the neck during the attack on the facility, which took place on the 4th of July, 2025. Pittman also sentenced trans militant Bradford Megan Morris to 50 years in prison, Maricela Roida to 70 years in prison, Elizabeth Soto to 50 years in prison. In another courtroom, Chief U.S. Justice Reed O'Connor sentenced four other defendants in the case. Cameron Ardold, also known as Autumn Hill, was sentenced to 50 years in prison, as well as Zachary Evitz and Savannah Batten. Daniel Ronaldo Sanchez Estrada, a Mexican national, was sentenced to 30 years in prison. So these people conspired together, established a plan of action, and then carried out a vicious armed attack against an ICE facility. This is one of a number of violent attacks against ICE, including multiple shootings that year. And yet, talk to the average person, they're still suffering, laboring under the delusion that right-wingers are the number one terror threat, that 90% of terror attacks or hate crimes in this country are committed by right-wing white nationalists, because that's the lie they've been fed over and over, because like we've illustrated, again, ad infinitum, ad nauseum, the mainstream media, its number one role is either establishing or disguising trends. And if this, if everything, like if there was just an algorithmic news outlet that just treated everything in with no narrative, no agenda whatsoever, obviously this attack would receive way more coverage than even something like January 6th would receive, because what this represents is the actual, you know, dangerous underlying current vibrating beneath the surface of American society. It's these types of groups carrying out these types of attacks, these types of strategies, these types of ideologies that are actually the biggest danger to not just the individuals in our country, but to the country itself, to our system, absolutely everything. This is the real danger. But by not reporting on it, by not even mentioning it, you know, maybe you get one little mention, oh, by the way, the crazy terrorists that are totally unaffiliated with anybody that attacked because they're probably all mentally ill, they were sentenced and moving on. What should be happening here is we should be, every time you turn on the TV, you should hear experts talking about the necessary steps to de-radicalize the left, the new bills that need to be passed to allow us, you know, more access to their communication so we can stop them before they get to the point where they're actually carrying out the attack. We would, and I'm not even saying I would agree with that, but you would see this type of language, this type of rhetoric, these types of policies being put forward. Why don't you? Because the media doesn't call for that, because the media isn't pushing this as a trend. They're not explaining that this is a regular occurrence, that attacks that share similar attributes, similar motivations, similar demographics, carrying them out. If they were to report on these every time they happen to the extent they deserve, it would be obvious to everybody this is a major issue in this country and it needs to be confronted. And the steps that Donald Trump has supposedly taken up to this point aren't actually happening. He declared Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. That happened. Since then, nothing has been done about it. The whole point of declaring them an international and domestic terrorist organization was that it would open up a whole toolbox of weapons to use against them. That you can arrest not just them, but the people who conspired with them. You can get them all in a conspiracy charge, or you can go after the people that give money because it's illegal to fund a terrorist organization. It opens up this massive, very useful set of tools that we could have been using since September of this year, or October, whenever they declared Antifa a terrorist organization. And yet, every time TPUSA tries to have an event, Antifa shows up and violently disrupts it. They're still out there. They're still operating. No arrests have been made, except for when they almost get away with this vicious and violent and nearly deadly attack. Again, just to lay out to you what this trial was. Seven co-defendants have pled guilty to charges ahead of the trial, while five others agreed to cooperate with prosecutors. 16 convicted defendants and six co-defendants will also face charges that include attempted murder, domestic terrorism, and conspiracy in Johnson County. That alone, you're talking about a small town in Texas having a terror cell of 24 people. 24 people were willing to conspire to carry out a violent military attack against the ICE facility with the purpose of murdering agents. A small town in Texas has dozens of people actively participating in a violent attack on law enforcement. And this doesn't even get a mention in the mainstream news. Again, this was a multi-step, multi-stage ambush assault. Prosecutors said a group of suspects set off fireworks, vandalized vehicles, and opened fire on responding officers during the July 4th attack. Video evidence shown at the trial showed the group arriving in black block attire and being equipped with firearms, body armor, medical supplies, and explosive devices. One of the co-defendants who pleaded guilty before the trial, Lynette Sharp, told jurors that members of the group trained together with firearms and coordinated through encrypted messaging apps like Signal. Evidence shown to the jurors showed members planning the direct action. So again, we have to hear about how Patriot Front is the worst thing in the world, because they march around holding flags and they have shields because they constantly get attacked and they constantly retreat, defending themselves and not fighting back. And we're supposed to think they're the worst people in the world. This is the reason we need new counter-terror measures in this country. Meanwhile, you've got dozens of Antifa members training with firearms, then conspiring together, dressing in all black, arming themselves, showing up at an ICE facility, setting off fireworks to draw out the agents, and then firing on the agents from elevated concealed sniper nests in order to kill them. I haven't heard a policy speech about this. I haven't heard congressmen make a big deal out of this. You cannot find this story on mainstream media. It gets one article in one alternative news outlet, and that's it. As if it never happened, as if it was a routine thing. I've heard more about the, as far as I can tell, basically non-existent threat to attack the UFC, where apparently there's a bunch of people planning stuff that they had no ability to carry out, using weapons they didn't actually have access to, under instruction from what is very likely to be undercover agents in the U.S. Army. But see, they want to make something out of that. They want something from that. They want to do something with that. So they're going to report on it a lot. They're going to cover it as if it's real. They're going to use it and say, if we didn't have these surveillance measures, we wouldn't have been able to find this and it would have been a disaster. So you have to, you know, re-up the NDA or whatever they're trying to get. See, they want something from it. So they're going to create the situation in the first place out of whole cloth and then manufacture the, you know, societal outrage about it so that they can weaponize that, manufacture it into political policy because they want to. You're going to hear more about the non-existent attack that didn't actually happen than you're ever going to hear about the literal, act of rebellion, act of revolt. I mean, this was a sizable number of people physically attacking, one of the armed bureaus of our country, and it's just treated like, well, you know, crazy, those crazy hippies, those crazy leftists are at it again. Anyway, we'll move on. It's like, you know, maybe we should focus on this. Maybe we should, like, do something about this. I mean, look at these freaks. Look at these freaks, psychos, deformed monsters. Why don't we know all of their names? Why don't we have profiles on these people? Why isn't the mainstream media investigating? What led down this path? What media did they listen to? Who did they watch? You know, where did they communicate on social media? Did they have X accounts or Facebook accounts? Or do they have accounts on Blue Sky? Maybe we need to look into that whole thing. Remember how Parler was taken down after January 6th, even though by the admission of the authorities, almost all the planning took place on Facebook and Twitter, but they were left alone and Parler was taken out. Why can't we have even a modicum of the same fervor and seriousness that the left seems to have? We're the ones who are actually being destroyed. We're the ones who are actually under threat. We're the ones who are actually oppressed by the state, actually constantly disadvantaged by the powers against us. And yet we don't stand up in the way that the left does when they get everything they want, whenever they want. And it's infuriating. And if we can do one thing here, if we can do one thing in this, with this outlet, this mission we've dedicated ourselves to, I would hope it's to wake people up to the reality of the world that they live in. So you cannot just read this article and go, oh, I got arrested and sentenced. Well, good. Glad we got a handle on that. But recognize there's a lot being left out of this story. There's a reason why they aren't publicizing this in the same way that everybody else does, that every other attack would be publicized. When you really think about it, when you really investigate this stuff and try to figure out what the motivation is behind, what you realize is it's not an accident that every single media outlet falls in line in exactly the same way about exactly the same stories, because it is a universal overarching plot by the people in power to destroy this country from the inside out. These Antifa scumbag idiot mutants are just the foot soldiers of the elite who want them to do exactly what they're doing, which is why the media outlets the elite control never report on it. Now, folks, I have a very exciting announcement to make. Exciting for me, exciting for you. It's really exciting for all of us because it is the return of Ultimate Power. It is the return of the Energy and Focus Patriot Punch and Mango Mix from the AlexJonesStore.com, Alex Jones Naturals Ultimate Power Drink Mix. I know one of our most beloved products ever, and one of my favorite products that we've ever had on the store was Turbo Force. This stuff is so much more powerful than Turbo Force. It will absolutely knock your socks off. You asked for it. It's finally back in stock. Ultimate Power at the AlexJonesStore.com. It is a clean daily performance formula built to support energy, focus, blood flow, stamina, and endurance. So whether you're working, training, taking care of your family, or just trying to feel sharp and strong again, this is your go-to. It only has 100 milligrams of caffeine. It's about the same as a normal cup of coffee, but it's paired with L-theanine to give you a smoother, cleaner energy without the jitters or the crash. It's Ultimate Power. It's back in stock. Get yourself some of the Ultimate Power. Feel the power. Unleash your potential. Energy and focus. Available now at thealexjonesstore.com. This stuff's going to sell out. Get it quick. Tell your friends. And you can get Alex to the Alex Jones app as well, alexjonesapp.com. You know, especially you young people, the Zoomers listening to me, go help your grandparents. I literally, when I was in Colorado, was like installing the app on my grandmother's phone, doing the shortcut to the Rumble channel so she could always find the live stream. Technology's moving. We're moving with it. And we got to make sure to pull everybody along with us. And of course, you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We have incredible products there. I'm kind of a sucker for all of the products that we have at thealexjonesstore.com because they're all awesome. And it's like, it's not a thing I'm getting paid to do, right? Like I could always carry around my old wallet, but I got the new wallet because it's so awesome. And I've been so happy with it the entire time. Now we have these premium nylon tactical belts available at thealexjonesstore.com. They're only $39.99 and they are of equivalent design, quality, standards, aesthetics, just amazing stuff. You will never be disappointed with the quality of items at thealexjonesstore.com. Whether it's the supplements or the gear like this, it's always top-notch, just like we try to keep our coverage always top-notch. Might be an ironic thing to say for a belt that has no notches. It is a heavy-duty nylon webbing with smooth automatic ratchet buckle, so there's no holes, no notches, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You just adjust it to exactly where you want it, and it stays there. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit, whether you're out working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. We've got three unique designs, the Cross Edition, the 1776 Edition, and the Alex Jones Signature Edition. You can get each one of these for under $40, but for a limited time, you can get all three designs bundled together for only $99. If you want my advice, they make fantastic gifts, so if you want one, go ahead and get all three, and then give your least favorite two out as gifts. Or heck, buy six and give three of them out as gifts. And of course, the America 250 Birthday Limited Edition 4th of July Apparel Sale is on. Folks, 4th of July is coming up quick. You're not going to want to be out there wearing like a purple shirt, right? You're going to want to be decked out head to toe in the most patriotic gear you can find. And the best place to get it, hands down, is thealexjonesstore.com. This collection right now is 30% off. So again, you're running out of time to get this before July 4th, so it's delivered and you can wear it with pride on Independence Day. Coming up very, very quickly. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com. Check out the America 250 Limited Edition 4th of July Apparel Collection. It's 30% off right now. We also have gravity-fed water filter systems back in stock, because we are, at the end of the day, but humble water filter salesmen here trying to both provide, because it's always the way we've been. You've got to not just combat this stuff at the political level, you've got to protect yourself in the meantime. In other words, they put chemicals in the water. We want to be activists, we want to be protesters, we want to be running for office to get that changed, to get the stuff removed from the water. In the meantime, filter your water. It goes like that. Destroying tyranny since 1776, Betsy Ross snake t-shirt. It's like, how many band logos can you put on a single shirt? How many logos that would get you kicked out of the U.S. military or investigated by the FBI can we put on a shirt? Because believe it or not, that is the state of freedom of this in this country, at least a few years ago. Do you remember there was a serial, like a list of symbols that had been banned by the U.S. Army for, you know, extremist ties? Embrace freedom and our symbols and our history unapologetically, proudly, and by going to thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very strange set of circumstances when it comes to the negotiations with Iran. Story at alexjoneslive.com. Trump says Iran negotiations going well. Strait of Hormuz is open, but no ships can pass, which is an entirely different situation. If you remember, Pete Hegseth said about a month ago that the strait was totally open except for the missiles that would be fired at the ships. I mean, it's open, but your ship will be destroyed if you try to go through it. This is totally different. Now the ships aren't passing, but the strait is open, okay? So I guess it's kind of the same. Actually, I guess it hasn't changed much at all. The strait is open, it's just not actually passing any ships right now. On Tuesday morning, President Trump announced the U.S.-Iranian negotiations are going well, and the Islamic Republic agreed to ongoing nuclear inspections. While the president said that the Strait of Hormuz is now open, no ships will pass through it, which means it's effectively closed. So, good. I'm glad this memorandum of understanding is bringing us so much understanding. It's like the memorandum of understanding that makes everything less easy to understand. The ceasefire in which no fire is ceased. The strait is open, but you can't actually go through it. This is what it's like. This is what it's like trying to cover this stuff. It's like, well then what is then? Okay, so it's the same situation as always. No developments have occurred. Strait is still closed. And here we are. Great. you say so. It's stuff like this. Iran rejects new claims by Trump, Vance, and Treasury Secretary Bessent that Iran has agreed to nuclear site inspections as a first step in permanently denuclearizing Iran. They say the U.S. claims are very damaging, and the arrival of IAEA inspectors would itself violate the MOU, with Iranian officials having already prevented IAEA Director Grossi from attending Sunday's negotiations and emphasizing that Iran's nuclear ambiguity policy, where the location of enriched materials is not known to the U.S., is one of Iran's most important strategic assets that it will not give up and would only benefit the enemy if compromised, per Tasnim. So again, this is what I'm talking about, folks. It's been like this for a week since the MOU was announced. Everything has been immediately contradicted by everything else. You know, it's just like, genuinely, I have no words. I have no words for what it's been like for the last week, where it's like, Israel is going to stop bombing Lebanon, except they launched 150 new air raids, and the strait is open except that no boats are passing through it, and we've already agreed on this very substantial portion of the potential ceasefire agreement, and Iran completely denounces it and says, we didn't even talk about that. Where are you getting this information? So what is there to say? I mean, at this point, it really seems like you should just be getting your news directly from Iran, because absolutely everything that the American side says is immediately contradicted by the Iranian side. And this is no small thing, since Iran is, in fact, one of the two parties negotiating. Like, you can't just say, like, well, they're lying about this. Like, I don't think they are. I think they're the ones that get to decide. I think it's actually up to them whether or not they want to let nuclear inspectors in. If Donald Trump says that and they contradict it, I'm going with them. I think they're the ones who get to dictate whether that is the case or not. Iranian spokesman Baghaei says that Iran made, quote, no new commitments on the nuclear file during the 18 hours of Switzerland talks. It did not negotiate the nuclear issue at all and does not plan to in the future. Iran further described IAEA inspectors as America's foot soldiers, which Iran says is the reason why no officials have agreed to inspections. Okay, so that's one aspect of the talks that Trump, you know, came out and said, absolutely, we definitely, you know, decided on this, only to have the Iranian party completely contradict him. But there's more. Iran's negotiating team strongly rejects Pakistan PM Shahbaz Sharif's claim that Iran-U.S. talks will discuss ballistic missiles as, quote, completely wrong and, quote, stemming from pure ignorance, with Iran emphasizing that the missile issue is, quote, fundamentally not on the table. And published MOU text shows such topics are included, per Fars. Iran adds Pakistan, quote, does not play a significant role in mediating these talks at all, and that Shahbaz Sharif's statements were made to exaggerate the mediation role of Pakistan, while Qatar plays the most effective role in current mediation. All right, so it's not just American authorities that are apparently saying things that are untrue about the MOU. It's the Pakistan PM as well. Well, great. Okay. Again, how are we supposed to understand any of this when everything is contradicted immediately by everything else? It doesn't seem possible. Even CNN has the story. Trump keeps claiming Iran made concessions. Iran keeps denying them. Ever since releasing a memorandum of understanding last week that appeared heavily slanted towards Iran, the Trump administration kept claiming Tehran agreed to other major concessions in the ongoing negotiations. The problem is that none of them appeared in the MOU, and Iran keeps denying them. And given the Trump administration's own demonstrated credibility problems, it's not at all clear whom to trust. I think it's pretty clear. I mean, let's see. Trump keeps saying things that are beneficial to his image. Trump keeps making statements that make it appear as though his side is winning, and then the other side contradicts those and says that's not happening. Who do you think is more motivated to lie about this? It's not all that complicated. Again, now the Pakistani prime minister has confirmed that the Iranian missile program will not be discussed with the Americans, saying the MOU does not mention ballistic missiles. Iran's side never wanted to even discuss it. Which, again, we've been explaining this for the last 2 years, that Iran has these ballistic missiles, that America got them to the table while saying they wanted to negotiate nukes, and then suddenly made a demand that they give up the industry, the like primary industry of their country, this is a ridiculous request that was never going to succeed. Is this in English? Let's watch this and we can understand it.
Ballistic missiles. It was never on the table. It was never on the agenda. And Iran side never wanted to even discuss about it. So that is not an impression. That is a fact of matter.
Okay, so now we have some better understanding of that for now. Who knows who that'll be contradicted by next. Let's go to clip 41 here. This is a Iranian member of the Iranian diplomat corps there talking about, again, sort of the disrespect that they feel from the Trump administration. Let's watch. We need this one translated. Let's go to clip 43 here. I can read along the subtitles. This is the Iran leader on the ceasefire with the United States. Let's watch. He says, when we say we don't want a ceasefire, it's not because we are seeking war. It's because this war must end in a way that ensures our enemies never again think of repeating these attacks and aggression. And I think they've already learned a valuable lesson. They've realized what kind of nation they're dealing with. One that won't hesitate to defend itself and is ready to take this fight as far as necessary. So to me, like that's the Rosetta Stone of understanding everything going on in these conflicts. That is Iran's motivation. That is the position they're staking out. They have no incentive to change from that position. He says, we don't want a ceasefire. It's not because we want war. It's because we have to make them understand they can't do this to us and not suffer the repercussions. Iran is not begging for peace. Iran is not defeated and prostrate and willing to make concessions wherever they can. They won this conflict. They are winning this war. These negotiations have to be held on that understanding. That has to be the starting point because it's true, because it's reality. Trump seems unwilling to face that reality, but that's the reality and that's who he's negotiating with. People who say, we're not going to settle this because we don't have to. Because all of your threats are meaningless to us because you tried your best to take us out. It didn't work. And so your threats mean nothing. Why would they? That's just reality. That's just where we're at. You can think whatever you want about it. You can say whatever you want about it. That's just what the lay of the land is. That's how the board is set. And Trump has to operate within that. What about clip 42? Do we have that translated? Or is that in scribble language? Because they also are sort of mocking the stance of the likes of J.D. Vance, who yesterday we showed the clip where he's saying, look, this $300 billion, it's not American money, it'd be investment from the Gulf states, and it would all have to go to American agriculture. And so then the Iranians, it's scribble language, I hear. It's not in English. But essentially what they're saying is they're basically mocking the fact that this is now the war aim. He's like, it went from we're going to close the strait and destroy Iran completely, bring them totally to their knees and replace their leadership and destroy their country utterly, to actually this is a big boon for American farmers. Actually, this is all about getting subsidies for the American agricultural sector. It's like, what is this? How are we so far off the mark? And of course, the reality is that that statement from J.D. Vance, that situation that, you know, he laid out was purely just to try to put lipstick on a pig. It was trying to make this absolute and abject defeat that we've suffered look like something that would benefit for us. It actually has nothing to do with the negotiations. It's about selling the war to the American people, claiming that, you know, this wasn't an abject and outright failure across the board. We also have Marco Rubio. If Iran's leadership makes a decision that they want the country, that they want to be a country instead of a revolutionary movement, they're going to have the opportunity to do incredible things. Again, what are you offering them that they need? Like, it would be one thing if they were struggling and miserable and suffering, which to a certain extent they obviously are. The sanctions have had a pretty sizable impact, but this idea that we're going to bomb them to hell, kill all of their leaders, murder their children in their elementary schools, and then turn around and go, surrendering to us would really open up a lot of financial opportunities here. I don't know if these people understand who they're negotiating with. Let's go to Marco Rubio. Let's go to this. Here's Secretary of State Marco Rubio talking about the potential benefits of Iran for joining our wonderful coalition of nations. Let's watch.
If Iran makes a decision, if its leadership makes a decision that they want to be a country instead of a revolutionary movement that exports terror, they're going to have an opportunity to do incredible things in Iran. I'm not promising you that that's the choice they're going to make. I'm saying if that's the choice that they make, then there will be opportunities. And those opportunities could include investment, as you've seen other countries in this region benefit from investment, from foreign direct investment. It won't be our investment. It won't be our government money. But I think that is something that's going to have to depend on progress made on a host of other security issues that have to be confronted in the days to come.
So this, you know, again, we have explained this entire time, and I've kept a finger on this pulse of this reality since Trump's second administration began, which is there are two distinct factions inside the Trump administration. Where J.D. Vance lines on this is kind of hard to say, but there's the pro-Israel, pro-war faction, and there's the pro-America, anti-war faction. And we have been reporting on this the entire time. That's what Signalgate was all about, and that's what firing of Mike Waltz was all about, all of the firings of Pete Hegseth's assistants, all this sort of stuff. Right now, I guess these two sides are best illustrated by Marco Rubio versus J.D. Vance, although, again, where J.D. Vance lands in all of this and what his real motivations are, I think are still, you know, up for debate. But I think it's a pretty good way to understand this is that you've got the Marco Rubio neocon establishment side versus the J.D. Vance America first, let's decouple from Israel, but I can't actually say that side. Here's Ben Shapiro on what he thinks about the J.D. Vance-led contingent negotiating in Switzerland. Let's watch.
Here he was talking about how awesome Pakistan, they're just the best. They're a Chinese cutout gang. Pakistan is in the negotiations because the Chinese wanted them there. They're an Islamist dictatorship.
What?
This is ridiculous.
Hold on, let's pause. What is he talking about? Because China wants them there? China's twisting Iran's arms, are they? I think Pakistan is perfectly capable of making that decision for themselves. I don't understand why China would be involved in this. He says Pakistan is a Chinese cutout, but it's also an Islamic dictatorship. Now, Pakistan's got some problems. It's actually a really interesting country. If you look up, like, the whole reason they have a nuclear program, it's like this one dude that just, like, single-handedly modernized Pakistan and got them all this stuff in cooperation with Western countries because this was in the Cold War. Like, Pakistan is much more a Western puppet than a Chinese puppet. And we looked at this a lot last year and the year before with the Prime Minister Khan. And the way he was driven out of office, like that was all, from our interpretation, orchestrated by the West to keep it Islamicized. I don't know where Ben Shapiro is coming up with this stuff. What's the problem with Pakistan? What's the issue with it? Let's go back to old Benny Boy, the rat.
How are you about the Pakistani role, especially?
Very good. We love Pakistan. Thank you.
We love Pakistan. Okay, he says as he walks through him. We love Pakistan. Do we? Do we love Pakistan?
Yes.
But here he was praising the Pakistanis.
to his field marshal in Pakistan, Asim Munir. I will say that since Field Marshal Munir welcomed us with the Prime Minister in Islamabad, I have joked that I have two very, very important people in my life, an Indian and a Pakistani. The Indian is my wife, and the Pakistani is Field Marshal Munir. And I've probably talked to Field Marshal Munir more than I've talked to anybody else over the last 3 months.
That's magical. Isn't that nice? Isn't that wonderful? No, it's weak and ridiculous. That field marshal has literally called for the destruction of the state of Israel, which is our ally in this war, unless you forgot.
Yeah, it's I keep forgetting. I keep forgetting that they're our ally in this war because of how much help they give us and how great they are to be friends with. Pakistan's also our ally. And it's like, what does he, this I just don't even understand. What does he expect the vice president of the United States to say to the country that is helping to facilitate these talks? They're like, hey, you know, Pakistan loves you, and you're supposed to turn around and be like, you're all Islamist. You don't like Israel, so F you. No, he says we love Pakistan. Sorry, Ben. Sorry, Ben. I don't know if the Israelis would treat that differently, but I think he's just trying to find things to be mad at this point, which is good. It's a return to form for Ben Shapiro. He was always an ever-Trumper. He always hated J.D. Vance. He only liked them momentarily when they were doing what he wanted for Israel. And for that brief flash of time, he pretended to support Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. And it's the only time in his career that he's actually pretended to support those figures, because fundamentally he is diametrically opposed to what MAGA represents. But when they serve Israel, he'll call everybody that opposes them AOC. He'll claim they're all leftists. Well, he's a leftist now. Sorry. I mean, maybe we could do a little historical study. Who's been a better ally to us, Pakistan or Israel? Who's cost us more? Who's screwed us over more? I mean, it's not even a question. Meanwhile, Israel targeted Gaza children, resulting in genocide, a UN inquiry said. Oh, well, great. Wow, we figured it out. Thank goodness. Now we have this UN study. I guess we'll throw it on the pile. This is the part of the show where we go over the crimes that we've known about forever that have been very publicly exposed for years, and we get to produce more evidence of more investigations into the same crimes, and all these investigations come to the same conclusions, and then nothing happens about it. It's kind of shocking how similar these situations are, whether you're looking at Anthony Fauci or the state of Israel. It's like, oh, look, another investigation. Oh, look, it turns out they're committing genocide. Oh, look, it turns out Anthony Fauci created the virus. Like, it, yeah, no, we know. We are well aware. So it's great. Now we have another thing to point to, another study that will not be actioned upon, will not actually see justice come about as a consequence of this investigation. Just be more of the same. Israel deliberately targeted Palestinian children, UN inquiry says. Israel calls the report a libelous sham that it strives to minimize harm against children. A report found that 30% of people killed in the Gaza war were children. 30%. Inquiry says Israel carried out crimes against humanity in the West Bank. So I'm sure any day now they'll be treated just like the Nazis, just like they deserve to be. It'll happen one of these days, I swear. New Lebanon-Israel talks are beginning, apparently, in the shadow of U.S.-Iran deal. Israel also admits now that they did smuggle Starlink systems into Iran, according to the former prime minister, which, of course, we reported on at the time. We're called anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists for saying. Retired generals, admirals, intelligence officials, diplomats, and former government officials who advised policymakers on the Middle East met with Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel as they again attempt to work their eighth front war of subversion against the United States using a bunch of traitors and quislings as their foot soldiers, pictured here with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And of course, as a consequence of all of this, Trump not only gets negative reviews nationally with his support cratering across the board, but of course, internationally, our reputation has been ruined. The United States is no longer trusted internationally because we keep betraying that trust for the sake of Israel. So, again, just relentless costs, no benefit. Never get any benefit whatsoever for our endless support of that genocidal nation. And I think that's all I need to say about that. I think I've said enough about that, and it's just the same thing over and over. What I'm going to do now, in preparation for Tiffany Cianci coming on here and probably delivering us some bombshell story about what's in the new farm bill, as it's always something that is designed explicitly to destroy the well-being of the American people. I'm going to prepare for this with a little bit of Ultimate Power from the AlexJonesStore.com. Ultimate Power is the powdered drink mix. Just plop it in there, mix it up, and chug it down. It is an energy drink mix. If you were a fan of Turbo Force, you will absolutely be a fan of Ultimate Power. It's like Turbo Force, but even better, even tastier, even more jam-packed with the vitamins, minerals, and nutrients you need to not just get you going, but keep you going throughout the day. I did a big heaping serving of it, stirring it with my golden spoon here. And it's not just caffeine, right? You go get an energy drink, it's 90% sugar, 10% caffeine. It makes you feel very energized for a little while, and then you crash. This stuff has absolutely no crash, and we actually have the full breakdown of all of the ingredients in Ultimate Power and what they do. There's a daily power blend for full spectrum matrix. There's a dose of about 7,000 milligrams of that proprietary combination. L-citrulline is in that blend. Basically, the blend is made up of these things. L-citrulline, which helps with nitric oxide production, vasodilation, as well as muscle pumps. Taurine, which helps with endurance, reduces oxidative stress, cardiovascular support, and has a great deal of cardiovascular support. Alpha GPC 50% is a premium nootropic. Green tea extract, L-theanine, natural caffeine, vitamin B6, and vitamin B12, that's methylcobalamin. All of these in massive amounts, massive bioavailability. And of course, it tastes great and keeps us funded. All of this at thealexjonesstore.com. Stay with us. We'll be back on the other side with Tiffany Cianci.
It took them 2 years to do it. When Bigley came on as our sponsor, now the owner of the Alex Jones Network and the main backer, I said, I want gravity-fed filters. I sent them the test from previous sponsors, and I said, these guys fell off. Their quality wasn't as good. I got rid of them. This happens to these companies. There's only out of more than 50 gravity-fed companies, three or four that have the very best filters that cut everything out. They're stainless steel, and they start cutting the quality for whatever reason. I said, I want the highest-rated stainless steel. I want a clone of these products, but even better, and I want filters rated this high or higher. They went out, took them 2 years, they did it. This is something everybody needs, everybody wants. There's a giant market of folks that know how wonderful gravity-fed filters are and know what quality is. We have all the tests published on the site. It's the best. There are companies selling filters that the stainless steel isn't as nice, anywhere close, and the filters aren't even the highest rated. They're selling the damn things for $400. They're selling units similar to ours, aren't even as good, for $500 retail, discounting at $400. These babies are $300 and even lower for VIP members. There is very small markup. The markup is not even 100% in these, okay? And when you're VIP, it's even lower. That is the best deal. This is a home run. This is the best. This is going to help hire new crew on top of the crew, extra crew. It's going to help get new reporters and hosts and the new network getting completed with all the equipment stuff. I mean, this is a big investment here. We're rebuilding our operations. We can't do it without you. So your word of mouth for the show, AlexJonesLive.com, getting the free app, sharing that with others where they can get it, AlexJonesApp.com, following us on X at Real Alex Jones, following us on Rumble at Rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. That's all critical in telling others to do that. Your word of mouth, your prayer is king, but getting these products is also critical. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you because we want you to love it and be impressed with it so we have a relationship with you.
days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.